Good afternoon, everyone. I want to call the Expanded Budget Committee meeting to order on this evening for the first of a series of seven meetings that we have scheduled to have departments come in and share their portion of the county administrator's budget that we received the other evening. Before we get going, there's a few announcements people want to make. Kevin McGuire wants to give a heads up on some things that he has put on the desk and some other things. Kevin, go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, Jim. Really briefly, I just wanted to alert you to the presence of the first correction page of the year. It's the blue sheet. It looks like what's projected on the screen. We'll be printing those on the same color. Hopefully we won't have as many as we did last year, but those will be distributed for each of these meetings and subsequently when we find that there need to be corrections made. You can see they stand out not only because of the color, but you can see in the lower left-hand corner there's a revision date on those. I also wanted to give you a brief update about some things that are new in the budget book this year. It's small, but I think given the experience last year, I hope you'll find it valuable. If you look on the screens, you'll see a typical program summary page from the budget book, and you can see that there's just one column of numbers for each of the prior year and the budget year. That's typical for a county department where it's just county revenue coming in. Last year, because of the transition to the new system, we had agencies also only showing the county money. And people had been accustomed to being able to have a comparison of the county money to the agency's overall budget. So new for this year, you'll see this is a sample of an agency page. You can see that for both the prior year and the budget year, we show both the county dollars in a given program and the total dollars in the program. So you have that as a basis of comparison.
Thank you.
Thank you for that.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Glad to put that right. I wanted to talk about some odd variations that you may see and perhaps answer some questions in advance. This is a case where there was a program funded last year, but because it wasn't in the budget last year, there was no program impact assessment record. So in that case, it shows up with the zeros in the 2017. This is a fairly good indicator of a new program. So you see that in the budget year, there's $50,000 for that program, but in the prior year, zero. Here's some other wrinkles on the same theme. These are from Soil and Water Conservation District. On top is a program that John leaves. He submits it to the budget, but it's funded on an as-needed basis. And the last 2 years, it has not had money allocated to it at budget time. So it shows up as a program with no apparent funding. And the one at the bottom is another example of John's from the Soil and Water Conservation District, and that is of a program that county money is not used to support. So you can see the totals column have dollars amount, total columns have dollar amounts, but the county portions show as zero. There may be some other variations, and I hope if you see one, you'll ask. But I think those are the main things that might otherwise cause questions. Do you have any? Go ahead, Carol.
Can I ask the example where it's all zeros? Is that something that just wouldn't have shown up before at all because there's no dollars involved and they wanted to show that they do the work? Or how would that have shown up?
I'm not entirely up on the whole history of these program impact reports being in the budget book. So I don't know at what point people started including even programs that aren't funded or programs that don't receive county money, but they're in there. And that is a case, that is an example of one that John has presented so that you know it's part of their work, but it doesn't have any money behind it right now.
Any other questions for Kevin? Joe, you had a few words you want to say?
I think Kevin has handled most of it. The division of the budget is, as you've seen in prior years, so there's a lot of good overview information under tab one about the county. My favorite page of the budget is section two, page one, which is a consolidated picture of our budget, expenses, revenues, and bottom lines. I use that all the time during the course of the year, and I think you may find it helpful as well. And a summary of the OTR is also under tab two. Tab three is the capital program. And I know we talked about getting this out before we ran out of time the night that we're going to do it. I'll take time during my presentation to go through the details of the capital plan. Then departments, tab five, agencies. And then, and Kevin has done a lot of work on the next couple of tabs too, the schedule of fees. The contracts, the memberships. Last year we had some glitches in that, first-year programming things. Kevin has spent a lot of time to make sure that those are addressed. And finally, the so-called chart of accounts, so you can see what all these account numbers refer to. So that's the basic organization of the budget.
Thank you, Joe. Yep. Anyone have any questions for Joe? Dan?
Yeah, I'm not sure it's for Joe, but it's... I just want to mention I still receive the Ithaca Journal at home. I opened it. I got it yesterday. Are you going to say something about that already?
I am.
Okay, then I'll let you take it.
Thank you. Any other questions? Let me just make a few comments. We have actually added one more EBC meeting than we had last year, hoping to not let them run into hours past 2 hours, and I think the way it's set up this time for seven meetings in September, that we should be able to begin on time and end on time. I'm going to follow the same procedure that I've always done. I will try my very best to recognize you. Please raise your hand. If I miss you, Katrina or Michelle will nudge me and remind me who is what. But I think I've learned to watch who is, you know, I haven't missed too many people. If I have, you know, I'm sorry about that. As we go through the question, I think the best process is specific questions about the presentation. If we begin to get too weedsy, that's with an S-Y. I will remind you that we have other people coming along and we have a schedule to follow. Dan brought it up, and Dan, about the Ithaca Journal article yesterday. Sarah's here. She wrote the article. The county administrator, Marcia, and others have spoken with her, and I believe she understands what the error was that was in the journal. And I will remind anyone who cares, we have two sources of revenue. We have sales tax and we have property tax. And now we have a third, which is casino revenue. And the county legislature, any county legislature in any county, does not control the sales tax. When we talk about sales tax, we are talking about the amount of money that is generated by people's purchases in Tompkins County. And when we say we hope that it goes up a certain amount, what we're saying is we hope that our revenue increases by that amount of money. And I'm not, you know, I've been a teacher, and I've dealt with young people and high school age, and I understand when an error is made, and I believe, you know, we've approached the writer of the article in a pleasant, confident way, and, you know, we're trying to help. I understand that there are youthful people who are writing stories in Tompkins County, much younger than, you know, I've been around for a long time, and I've watched the group get younger and younger. And I think any of us always want to help someone be a better reporter. And, you know, I hope what we offered to Sarah will be helpful to her as we do the budget going through the future. Excuse me, Carol. Going through the future. And I'm sure it will. One comment. Go ahead.
Sarah, how long have you been on the job? Third week. So welcome to Tompkins County, and we're all happy to talk to you anytime.
Welcome to the local government. It's not as simple as it seems. And I'm sure the legislature now and in the future will be applauding themselves on the back, and Rick Snyder, every time the sales tax number goes up, and we'll give you credit for that. So, at any rate, first up, Board of Elections, followed by the county attorney. The Board of Elections people are here. Welcome. Have at it.
Good afternoon.
Afternoon.
You're going to like our budget.
We're all yours.
Said it with such confidence. Go ahead, Elizabeth.
These are our numbers projected for 2018. We don't have a lot of changes, and our whole budget requests are all covered by rollover. That's why I said you're going to like it. And Steve will explain where we need to use those rollover requests.
The major influences, 2018 being an even numbered year, this is going to be likely much busier than this year. You have spring village elections in the spring, and May 15th we'll have school elections. We work with six school districts in the county to help them administer their elections. There's going to be a June federal primary, either for Congress or U.S. Senate or both. September, you have a state and local primary, which would be for governor, attorney general, state assembly, state senate, and county offices. Next year, county sheriff and county clerk are off or are up for countywide races. You have November 6th general election, and then you have increased voter participation. The even-numbered years, you get a significant uptick in number of voters that get engaged in the elections, and that means more voter registration activity and significantly more absentee ballot activity. And, of course, all of these elections require, a lot of prep for them, preparing the machines and the ballots. And then in addition to that, there's ongoing maintenance for the machines that we're required to do by the New York State Board of Elections.
The two wrenches in our political calendar for next year is having that June primary for one, and now we assist 5 to 6 school boards. So what happens is you're getting petitions and everything in January for your federal primary and your village elections. And we were looking at the calendar, and we're like, well, I think we have 2 months out of the year where we can catch up on everything else because of the way the calendar lays out. So that's why we wanted to show you that.
Wow.
So we've asked for a little bit of a change in our full-time equivalents, and it's just a one-time for next year's political calendar and getting ready for all the different elections. We have two half-time senior voting machine technicians. So we need them to go full-time just for the year so we can get all the elections and all the machines ready for each election. And then we have what we call two junior techs, which has a couple thousand dollars in the budget, and we need to increase that just by a little bit. And so you can see that we have saved our rollover just for next year, and we've asked for $20,000 for our primary. Our primary is usually $35,000, but we know that our primaries aren't going to cost that much this year that we have budgeted, so we're going to take the rest of that rollover for next year and put it in next year. So we thought rather than, ask for additional money, we'll just save it for next year. And then most of the rollover is coming from grant money, primaries that are rolling forward, some travel we didn't spend. And our conferences, which are 2 times per year, are geared more on the voting machines, so we were hoping to get a little extra money in to take our technicians so they can also participate. And that's it.
Questions. I'm Martha Will.
Hi, thanks very much. There's obviously a lot of news about the voter rolls and et cetera. And you talk about maintaining our machines. I remember when we, was it 10 years ago, whatever, we had more than that. We were deciding what machines to get. We got the paper ballots and the scanners. And an idea was that we would audit them to make sure that the tabulation matches the paper. How often does that happen? Do you have a
matches percentage? The paper every single time. We have yet to have a situation where there's been a difference between the tabulation and the manual count of the ballots.
And it happens after every election. So that's what tightens up our political calendar even more. It's not when the election's done, we're done. Then we have to go through the whole audit process.
So you, at that point, you audit all the votes?
No, we audit 3% of the machines for every election.
3%, then you look at, you make sure that the paper matches the tabulation.
Right.
Do you ever have any problems?
Never had any problems with that. It's been spot on every time.
Knock on wood. Go ahead.
And the news articles, as far as, you know, the tampering, we're not hooked up to the Internet, so that's the biggest thing. You can't tamper if we're not hooked up. That's why we have a whole separate security and storage facility for the voting machines. But that's why it takes longer to get the results up on election night, because we're not hooked to the Internet. So then we have to do another process to get the results up.
Okay. And how are you doing on election inspectors? Do you need more people? Oh, wait,
always.
Is this your chance for an advertisement? So you're always looking for...
Yeah, it's an ongoing process. Every year we bring on new ones, and some that have done it for a few years have decided they've done their civic duty. I don't think very many of them do it for the money. It's more that they're interested in elections being run smoothly.
And I know one of the problems is it's such, especially for general elections, such a long day. But if you were to do it half, like have somebody do half a day, then you need twice as many inspectors, right? Okay.
Yeah.
Usually it works well if someone has a partner or a spouse, that combination. Someone can do half the day, the other person does the other half. And then if something happens where the first person can't do it, or the second person can't do it, the first person will stay.
Okay.
So that helps as well.
Thanks very much.
Will, question.
Well, that was new. So you can actually do a split shift. Wasn't aware of that. More questions on the machines. Our machines are now getting old. What is our replacement schedule? Are they going indefinitely, or do we have a plan to systematically replace them?
We have one machine that we are using for parts now, where we can use it out of our 55. We do have a maintenance contract with the Dominion, the vendor, to handle a lot of the issues that come up. But we do find that in our quarterly maintenance and in our test decking, we occasionally find an issue that needs to be addressed before we can put the machine back in service. And, you know, we do that. It is happening with a little bit more frequency, but I think we're still... You know, still have it under control.
We're entering middle age as opposed to old age.
What's that?
Middle age as opposed to old age. Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
And other question, very quickly. The economics of a school board election, do we pay for the inspectors? We just supply the machines and get them to and
from? We do the programming. We do some of the training. They hire the poll workers.
Okay.
usually using our poll workers, but not always.
Thanks, Steve.
Carol, last question.
Yeah, so my question is less for you, I think, than maybe for Joe or Kevin. So if the budget this year is the same as last year, but what number carries over to next year when you calculate their budget and changes next year, the $831,848 or the $731,602?
The latter, not the former. So the one-times don't carry over. And
I think all of the OTRs are supported by rollover, right? And so that's a one-time. So that does not roll over.
Okay. And the person that you're adding, or the one, whatever the FT is that you're adding, is that, do they understand that it's a one-year position?
Yes.
Yeah, we normally just do that in a presidential, but we had to do it again for the gubernatorial.
Thank you.
Mike.
Two things. Following up on Will's question about the machines, do you think we ought to be putting some money away for their replacement? We replaced them because we got a state or federal grant, or we bought all the new machines. And that's, what, 8 or 10 years ago now? So eventually we're going to have to replace them, they aren't going to give us the money to do that. We're going to have to do them ourselves, just like the old days. So are we thinking about that?
Steve and I talked about it. We still have grant money.
As long as they don't take it.
As long as they don't take it. We still have like $1 million, and that's why we haven't.
Really?
Yeah, I think it is. Just when machines,
but we do have some money,
yeah.
Yes.
Where's Rick? Where can we sequester that?
we can get you a figure on that, though.
Yeah.
We can.
And,
well, that's good news.
Yeah.
The other thing I wondered about is, are we competitive with what we're paying the poll workers with other counties around us? No. We were behind for a while.
Yeah. Last year, but prior to coming to the legislature to ask you to recommend the raise from $10 an hour to $12 an hour, we surveyed probably about 30 of the other counties in the state from all different sizes. And I'd say right now we're right in the middle of the pack, maybe just a little bit above average for our pay of the poll workers.
Thank you.
We are ahead of most all the other counties as far as what money we have left for grant money. And it was because Tompkins County, the way they did the formula, had higher voter participation, and that's how they did the formula. So many counties have been out of money for a while now.
Don't let them have it.
Anyone else? Thank you both. And let me just say one thing. As I get ready to leave the legislature, I will be applying to be a poll watcher.
Yay.
And I am able to tell blindfolded what flavored donut it is. So look for me to be there. The county attorney is up next. Thank you both very much for your help.
Thank you.
Thank you. That says district attorney.
No. I was going for a big budget increase.
Yeah.
Okay. County attorney. That's good. Ready?
Welcome, John.
Thank you. I suppose if you like their budget, you're really going to love this one. Because not only do I have no OTRs, but I'm asking for less money than last year. And I don't know if any other department is asking for less money, but so certainly I have no special requests. The basic reason is that, you know, I've discussed with you, and you're aware of, Susie Cook went to halftime from full-time. That's resulted in a savings in both our salary line and our fringe line, whereas other things which have gone up somewhat have not gone up as much. So if we go to the next slide, that just basically shows that we've got 3.5 full-time equivalents. I'd be happy to go through, if you'll turn to, I believe it's page 41 in your book, 441, is that right?
Yes, it is. Section 441.
Okay.
Sorry.
Just to point out the important things, obviously the most important thing is the bottom line. We're going from budget of $428,000 to an overall budget of $415,000, about a $13,000 savings. If you look in the salary and wages line, that's gone down. If you look in the fringe benefits line, that's gone down. There is one line which has gone up somewhat, and that's the professional services, which I'll give a kind of brief explanation of. One is we've had for a long time an inadequate funds in there. Professional services pays for things like our experts, our transcripts, our records. There's some overlap between that and our insurance reserve fund, because if it's a lawsuit, those costs come out of the insurance reserve fund. On the other hand, if it's not a lawsuit, like let's say we're appealing a juvenile delinquency holding or something like that, it really should come out of our professional services fund. But because we haven't had adequate funds, we've been taking it from the insurance reserve, so we really should have the money in there that's adequate for what we need. Also, the county code is paid out of that, and I expect that those costs are not going to go down. In fact, I'm hoping to do some improvements in the code this year as well as next couple of years. And then a couple of other things. Joe felt, and I feel too, that given that we're going to be short of staff, that we may have instances where, you know, as we'll be operating very much on a shoestring, where we may need some extra help. So it's sort of have a bit of a safety net there so that we can hire people on a temporary basis if needed. And also, we have the risk in that the one of the reasons that we're able to do this with Susie going to halftime, other than the fact that she has 35 years experience, is the demographics have been such that our juvenile delinquency and PINS cases are down now. But starting in October, the Raise the Age law comes into effect, and I think that trend could stop, and it could start moving in the opposite direction. So we want to have adequate funding in the event that happens. I think it will happen to some extent. The issue is to what extent. But again, overall, the budget is down. I put less money in there than we were saving, so that would still be an overall savings. And that's my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, John. Question, Mike.
Follow up on that, John. Raise the Age has us all kind of concerned because when they first started talking about it, the state was talking about reimbursing all the costs, and then all of a sudden that kind of dissolved away. So one more state mandate without the funding behind it. Can you envision we're going to have more people in your office to do that?
It's certainly possible. I mean, you know, we have some estimates based on numbers, based on the past. And obviously, once it goes in stages, you're going to bring 16-year-olds in, and then you're going to bring 17-year-olds in. And certainly that would mean more cases for our office. So the extent of that, whether it would require a new person, whether it would require a new deputy, I know in talking with other county attorneys that some are asking for that right now. I think it's best to wait and see what happens. But that's one of the reasons why I want to have a little extra money in reserve just in case. But it's certainly possible. I mean, I don't think our numbers are going to justify it, but it's hard to say until it actually happens.
And my other question is, our Commissioner of Social Services just retired, and she had a lot of background prior to becoming commissioner as far as supervision of assistant county attorneys in the Social Services Department. I've always been an advocate saying that they should be directly under the supervision of the county attorney because they are assistant county attorneys. And I wondered now, does it make any sense for us to be considering those attorneys coming under your supervision?
I mean, there's always been positives and negatives about that. You know, like you say, Patricia was always, when I first started here, Patricia was working the legal unit, so obviously had expertise in that area. But we do have a logistics issue. You know, our office is here, their office is there. We don't have physical space for all the attorneys to be together. That's not necessarily a thing which eliminates it totally, but it presents issues. There are advantages and disadvantages. There's a funding thing because, as you probably know, the DSS attorneys receive their time is compensated for through state dollars, whereas what we do is not. So it creates an issue of dividing that time, but some counties report that that's actually worked to their benefit. But it would certainly have to divide time between, you know, what is that work and what is not, what is work covered by state funds and what is not. So it raises a whole bunch of issues. You know, I've always saw both benefits and drawbacks to it.
Might that be an issue that a GO might want to take up next year? Take a look at it?
Sure.
Thanks.
Anyone else? Question for Martha?
Just to summarize, so you said about raise the age. It'll phase in next October just with 16-year-olds. Is that right?
Right. And then the following October, 17-year-olds.
So you kind of want to wait and see what the caseload looks like?
Yeah, how that affects the numbers, what the caseload will actually be.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else? Thank you, John. Human Service Tompkins, that would be Kathy, the coalition, and then followed by community agencies. Welcome, Kathy Schlatter.
Good evening.
Hello.
It's nice to be here. Just in case you are wondering, we hope you like our presentation too, but we all will be asking for extra funding, so not get your hopes up that you'll go through the whole night without that. So I just wanted to bring the attention. So we're going to do the coalition first. This is John Mazzello, who is our Director of Community Services, who is in charge of the agency process. So John and I will both be presenting the agencies. So I just want to bring your attention that we rebranded ourselves this year, and this is our new logo. So we thought we would share it with you. Okay, the mission statement, just to remind you, for the coalition is to enhance the delivery of health and human services in the Tompkins County area. This is the recommended budget. It shows a 1.29% increase. It's actually a 2% increase over our budget, but because one-time funding is included in there, it looks like 1.29. But if you take out the one-time funding we had last year for a new server, it comes at 2%. So you'll be seeing this as we go along. We decided to do a 10-year history of ourselves and all the agencies to kind of share with you what funding has looked like over the years. So this increase translates to a 4.3% increase in funding over 10 years for the coalition. Sorry, for some reason my notes aren't on here, so I'm going to have to flip.
Yeah, and costs have gone up that just by 4.3 over 10 years, right?
I was only hoping. Oh, wrong arrow. I apologize. There we go. So the three major program areas of the coalition are human service planning, health planning, and the 2-on-1 information and referral. And I'm just going to spend a minute talking about the different programs that we provide under those. Under human service planning, we take care of the 28-member continuum of care. Last year, these are all numbers from the past 12 months. We had 248 attendees at our Homeless and Housing Task Force meetings, which deal with homeless services, and 407 attendees through our workshops. That's training, support trainings for boards and staff of nonprofits. We also do individual nonprofit consulting, and we had 161 attendees at our HSC forums, of which we are going to have one next week talking about leadership in Tompkins County. So please feel free to attend. We are right now doing our agency funding and review. We also do funding for the Social Service League, and we are the chairs of FEMA funding in this county. And as most people know, we run the 3,000-person listserv. Health Planning Council, we have the health insurance navigators that help people sign up for health insurance. Over the past year, we've assisted over 800 individuals in gaining health insurance. We also have what we call the community health advocates. These are people who are there to answer questions about people's health insurance, help people use their health insurance, and lots of times they work with the insurance companies to help people get paid for things when they don't really understand or are having trouble dealing with health insurance. The 1,200 prescriptions were written through the UrgentRx program. And we also we have a program called the Population Health Improvement Program. This is a 5-county program, and these are I have to keep flipping because I don't know where that's at. These are 5 counties that got together and decided that the initiatives they were going to focus on are around mental health and medical transportation, and that is Tompkins, Tioga, Broome, Shenango, and Delaware counties. So this is a lot of the programs that come through DSRIP are multi-county, and this is the one, and actually John also runs that program. All right. 201 information referral. We take about 14,000 calls, texts, and walk-ins throughout the year. This past year, we answered 3,900 FITA income tax program calls. So we do the screening and scheduling for the income tax program. We took 3,900 calls in 3 months. And that program, because we got a number from Brian, it brings over $3 million back into the community. That's free income tax help for people who qualify. We set up over 930 rides through the FISH program. That's Friends in Service Helping. That's a program that gives medical transportation to individuals. And they also take appointments for our health navigators and community health advocates, and they took over, screened and scheduled over 1,000 appointments last year. So our major influences on our agency, these are just a couple. And I won't do these in order. There is a lot of uncertainty around federal and state funding right now for agencies. It makes agencies nervous. They don't know how far they can plan ahead. So any kind of support, we are constantly giving them around that. Agencies and boards are requesting, we're finding more support around organizational issues and board issues. And some of that can be tied to there are a lot of leadership changes in this sector. It's a lot of turnover in both higher levels of management and middle management, and we try to provide support when that happens in an agency. These are our over-target requests. So we have requested $20,000 to raise our continuum of care coordinator position. From right now, she's 60%, 22 and a half hours to what is full-time for us, which is 37.5 hours a week. The position is collectively funded, since homelessness is a collective issue. It's funded through the Park Foundation, county funding, hopefully HUD funding. HUD gives us a little bit of money, United Way of Tompkins County, and a little bit from the city of Ithaca. And we put all those together to put together a full-time position for this. Duties of the coordinators, they do the coordinating of all 28 members. There are 6 current subcommittees. Those subcommittees around developing housing, identifying barriers, the housing. I'm sorry, here we go. I'm looking for my page again. Barriers to services, the point in time count, which has to happen every year, one around youth, governance, coordinated assessment, and information gathering. The person writes and submits the yearly HUD grant proposal, which brings in right around $200,000 per year to support things like Chartwell House, Magnolia House, Lakeview Health Services, and Amici House, which is starting construction and should be up and running by next year, and a tiny little bit for planning. Things that we have added this past year, which are requiring more work by the coordinator, is we rolled out this past year a coordinated assessment, which means all the agencies use assessment form to assess anyone who are homeless. They're all put on what is called a vulnerability index. There is one list that's kept by the coordinator, and people are housed off that list when housing becomes available, depending on their score on this list. So the most vulnerable people, we make sure get housed first, and then the group meets twice a month to go over the list to make sure nobody is falling through the cracks. It's been a lot of work to roll this out, and that they're constantly revising it to make it work for the agencies that use it. We are taking over the Homeless Management Information System, which gathers all the information about housing and services so we can report it directly to HUD. So major influences on this position. Homelessness is, we're seeing an increase. They're seeing an increase actually all around the country. It went down. People are making the assumption a lot of this has to do with the opioid crisis and other factors. I was talking to Rich Bennett. The shelter has been full all summer, which is unprecedented. It usually drops off a bit in the summer, and it's been at capacity all summer long. As everybody knows, finding housing takes a lot of effort for very low or no-income people is challenging. HUD constantly changes the rules, and we have to be able to stay competitive. It's not as funny as that. It makes me laugh because they actually told us we had to do something last year, and we spent a lot of time doing it, and then they told us this year that people were having trouble doing that, so they were dropping that, and they were instituting a whole different section of things that we had to do this year. And they tend to do that kind of on a yearly basis. We have noticed that increasing number of state and federal housing projects that get HUD funding, they're requiring all these projects to get go through the coordinate the COC to make sure they're coordinated and getting approval of the COC. So we don't develop the projects, but we have to look at them and give COC approval. And then I talked about the coordinated assessment and the homeless management information system. So that is it. I don't have a slide that says questions, so I'll go back to that. If anybody has any questions. So our request is for $20,000.
Martha and then Anna.
Maybe it's a Joe question. I'm looking like it's funded, that the $20,000 is funded.
No, I don't think so. So when it's a request for a target increase, I deferred. So I may suggest that you do it, which is the purpose of that sheet. But in terms of putting money behind it in the recommended budget, no, you would have to draw it out of the contingent account and bring it into this that item.
I thought the uncolored ones on this sheet were funded.
No, the uncolored, well, on the Kathy's probably flying blind on this because I don't think she's seen this. So on the first page of the sheet that you're looking at, those are the ones that I funded. And then when you go to the second page, you'll see a break, and there's another group that says not funded.
Okay.
But if it's not color-coded, those are the ones where I said, if you ask me, this is what I would suggest that you fund. If it's pink, no. If it's blue, I would suggest a modification of what was requested.
Okay, so I see. So it's the column says funded and then suggested, like, so you suggest. Yes, okay.
Yeah.
And this was requested as target, right?
Yes.
Yep. And so as you read that, you would read that as me suggesting that you do fund that. And since I have the microphone, the other thing I would note is that also relates to the housing and homelessness kind of priority bucket that we established. So when I tallied up those cost of those items, this OTR is a part of that calculation, that priority.
So it's in, okay. So it's in there, but okay. But you have included it in the budget. And so, Kathy, you I'm a little confused about that it's collectively funded. So we, how much is our part already in the position?
Without the 20,000?
Right. So she's 60% time right now. So, like, how much are we already? How much is our funding already?
I mean, it's roughly.
We got $5,000 from you a couple of years ago.
And our part is only five.
Yeah, I could do the math. But I mean, if you fund the 20,000 that I did do, your portion would be about 28% of the total.
If we did that, got it. Thank you very much.
I had Anna.
Ashley, Martha just asked my question. So, thanks.
Just so I'm clear, could you tell us again the continuum of care coordinator? What do they do when they come to work each day?
Can I go back?
Yeah, I just want to make sure I know.
These are the things they do. They coordinate. So the HUD requires that you have a community-wide planning around homelessness or get any money. So we have 28 agencies and individuals who meet on a regular basis, six subcommittees that develop things like housing, that look into what the barriers are, those people working
this
with landlords.
This was for the other hours?
Trying to develop and get people into housing around homelessness. Right now she's in the middle of writing the grant, which by HUD's estimate takes over 100 hours to write.
Okay. This is helpful. Thank you.
Martha, and then Anna, did you do your question?
One of the questions I had was Martha's, but I have another question, but I'll let Mike go first.
Well, Martha and Mike, and then you.
Okay. So as an explanation, we, in the housing strategy, we've been saying we need sort of a focal point of, you know, where do you go for housing information? And this person, this function is sort of the closest thing we have. And so planning and sustainability staff and I met with Kathy and the Park Foundation, and we're looking for to try to, I mean, this really fits with trying to centralize the resources and the information, and the person who's in Tierra Labrada in the position, HHS, heard from her a couple months ago. She's been doing an amazing job of really holding a million strings together. And so I guess I can't advocate right now for this Bunting, can I?
Right.
Okay.
Mike, Anna, whoever.
I wanted to add one of the things that you had mentioned in HHS that I really appreciate. We've been talking a lot here about coordinating software. And what I really appreciated, and I also recognize we sort of glossed over it because you had so much to say, but having one software that all 28 agencies can put intake forms into, so a person could go to any one of them and all 28 can automatically see it, and that she coordinates all of that is a, or putting that together, rolling it out during the training, I think, is bigger than people think. So I appreciate it, and I just wanted to point that out for everyone because it's very, very impressive, and it's a perfect example of the shared services type of thing that we're hoping to do, which creates a lot of efficiencies. A follow-up to Rich's question, she only works right now 22 hours for the Human Services Coalition, about?
22 and a half. She also is a full-time student.
Okay.
But she graduates in December.
Okay, so that was my question. So she'll be able... She'll be able to do it. Our hope is that once she graduates, then we will add this as a full-time position for her.
Right.
Great. I was hoping...
The work's there. She just hasn't been.
Okay. Great.
Mike, and then Carol.
Kathy, I just wondered, in the realm of the not-for-profits out there that we service through the Human Services Coalition, are you getting applications for other not-for-profits that we aren't funding, or I know your board reviews these, or are we pretty well caught up with the ones that are out there?
Caught up's an interesting word. John's going to do a presentation about all the requests that we've had from the nonprofits this year. We do use a Citizens Review Committee for that. They've recommended funding for some of them, partial funding for others. Right now, I think the interesting thing is while everybody's really nervous about their funding, not much actually has happened. There's been a lot of, we're going to cut funding out for this and this and this, but they're just kind of holding steady. It's like they're just waiting for this big shoe to drop on them. Some people are actually, as you'll see, proposed to get, you'll see on a proposal to increase funding to CDRC, which was cut funding back in 2011 very drastically, and the courts are now going to put funding back into these organizations for mediation. So I'll talk about that, but we're suggesting to put their funding back up to the level so that they can use it to match the state funding that is coming down. So there are some smaller agencies that always struggle to get enough funding. And, you know, agencies have a tendency to go up and down the needs. But I haven't heard right now that they've lost a lot of state and federal funding. I don't know if that helps.
Thanks. Look forward to hearing from John.
Carol.
I must have misunderstood something that Kevin said. I thought you said that we were going to get information about the various agencies so that we could put our funding in the context of their budgets. It doesn't look like that. I must have misunderstood. But my question is for Kathy.
Wait, can I just clarify that? There's a second presentation here regarding the agencies.
It's coming after that.
I understand that, but if it's useful to you to be letting us know anything about to put the funding that you're asking for from us in the context of your total budget, I wanted to give you the opportunity to do that. If it's not useful to you, then you don't have to. But, you know, I know that you raise money from the people who participate in programs. You're not only counting on us. So if it's useful to you.
No, county funding is about, back there sitting, it runs about 40-some percent of our funding. We do get a lot of state funding, mostly for our health, the navigator and the community health advocates. We get some funding for 211. Most of the funding for human service planning, the function that works with the agencies, does come from the county. We tend to just try to break even with our trainings because we try to keep them as low as possible so they don't cost a lot. Some years we break even, some not quite.
Great. Well, thanks for all you do in the community.
Martha.
So you said you get a fair amount of state money for the health planning function.
We get rural health. We are a rural health agency. And then we get money for our navigators, for the population health improvement program, and for our community health advocates.
Okay, and so that's, for example, so that's where you said you had 800 individuals assisted by the navigators to sign up for insurance.
Right. That's state funding.
To sign up for the Affordable Care Act, right?
Yep.
Okay, so the Obama administration is, I guess, did already cut 90% of that money.
Trump administration?
The Trump administration. So Trump administration cut that, it was called outreach money or whatever it was, marketing and the money to help those navigators, right? So my question is that federal money that comes through the state and therefore, going forward in the future, we'll have trouble with that?
Right. So the money that the 90% cut that you're specifically talking about, the states that have expanded their own marketplace were not included in that cut for the navigators and the marketing cut. So New York State actually this afternoon announced that not only are they not cutting the open enrollment period, but they're also they're not cutting the outreach and the time. And at this point, as yet, have not cut the navigator positions that flow through to us. Now, if there's a cut from their federal funding that goes into New York State and then they turn around and do cut that. But at this point, the state has not chosen to follow through in those cuts. The federal changes that were in the news over the last couple of weeks are for those states where they have not elected to independently expand their Affordable Care Act exchanges, and so they're receiving federal funding to do that. That's where those cuts are at this point.
Thank you.
I apologize, but I don't know your name, and would you please say it for the record?
Yeah, I'm John Mazzello. I'm Director of Community Services with HSE.
Thank you very much. Any other questions for Kathy in this section? Thank you. Kathy, Community Agencies, Human Service Coalition.
Thank you all for letting us stick around for another time. And I guess I'll add, as everyone's starting today, if you'd like to give us twice as much as we're asking for, then we won't ask you for anything next year. So, well, maybe we would. I do have some handouts based on what you've asked for in the past last year, just with all the things that we'll show you on the slides today. I don't know if that's something that you'd like now or we can leave at the end, but if you would like those, send them on. Okay, there's a batch over there. Thanks. And this is what you requested last year, and it also includes some charts and graphs that you'll see on the slides this evening. So just to summarize the budget for this year, our 2018 request that's been recommended by Joe is roughly a 1.6% increase in total over last year. In target funding, it includes a 2% increase in county funding, and then closer to 1% increase in the city sales tax portion. Therefore, it works out to about a 1.6% increase, including looking at the over-target requests. The recommendation from the county administrator is approximately 8.5% decrease. Our amount this year includes $50,000 for the second year of the Transitional Housing Fund, which is a three-year one-time funding, and that was Kevin's example of one where it wasn't included in last year's budget, but now is included and was paid out last year. So there's a slight difference there. All totaled this year from the community agencies, in response to Mike's question, we received roughly just over $1 million in target funding requests, and then another $60,000 in one-time funding, of which we had to, of course, winnow some away to get closer to the target funding. So that includes all the requests. So in terms of responding to is everyone caught up, that is one way to look at it. We do have a citizens review committee, includes people who are very experienced in nonprofits and human services, and includes Christine Barksdale, who's on our Human Services Coalition Board and also with the police department, involved in many community initiatives. Marsha Baum, formerly director of GIAC. Diane Cohen is the director at Finger Lakes Reuse and also on our board. Mary Pat Dolan, formerly with the Department of Social Services, and John Lemley, who's a longtime HSE board member and has been involved in this review committee for many years. So in terms of major influences this year, they do fit nicely in with the ones that Kathy mentioned as relates to HSE. The unpredictability of state and federal funding, of course. We've talked about turnover of leadership at both the executive and management levels with several of the nonprofits that we've been we support both through this funding source and all the others in the community. By my count, about 5 new executive directors this year and last just the 17 or 18 agencies that we review funding for. So you're looking at about a third over a two-year period, so a pretty significant changes, including some who have been in their roles for many years. For the organizations, some difficulty in filling positions. While, of course, it varies across the different agencies, particularly difficult in finding the right fit. So not necessarily challenges in finding any applicants at all for positions, but difficulty in finding the right people. There's always challenges with, of course, in the nonprofit sector, the amount that organizations have to pay and their ability to recruit and then retain those good employees. And finally, the opioid crisis and and other related challenges come out of that are affecting several of the organizations that we work with through this process, whether it's creating challenges more directly with the folks they work with or creating additional burdens and challenges with the family members and others that those people have to support. So those are some of the major influences, and of course we've talked about those in some detail already. So this year we're going to talk, and at Joe's recommendation, we're providing just a brief slide on each of the agencies just so you can see a little bit of context for each of them and know where the county funding goes. For the for many of the agencies, we have recommended level funding, and I'll talk about those first, and we'll go through those pretty briefly. There are a couple organizations that we have recommended some increased funding. Then we'll talk about those, or I'll pass it to Kathy. We'll talk about those that for which we're recommending one-time over-target requests and target OTRs. And then separately, while we'll present a slide on OAR, they will have a separate presentation to you at a later date. So these slides I'm going to kind of go through quickly, but just to give you a sense of where things are. So the Advocacy Center, county funding supports two programs, both their youth program and as well as their education programs. We're not recommending a change in funding to the Advocacy Center, and you can see that over the past 10 years, including this year's recommended funding, there's been a slight decrease in the funding that the county provides through this process to the Advocacy Center. The second organization that we provide funding to, Alternatives Venture Fund, or VITA, VITA Income Tax Prep Program, this is one that Kathy already mentioned in the HSC proposal, and as she mentioned, it brings in more than $4 million in funds to low and moderate income residents in Tompkins County. This includes $1.5 million in the earned income tax credit, about $630,000 in child tax credits, and about $100,000 in education tax credits. So this program certainly is one that brings back to county residents a lot of value. Moving on to Better Housing for Tompkins County, this is still a separate organization while affiliated with Ithaca Neighborhood Housing Services, for several purposes, still a separate nonprofit organization. This program provides home repair services for seniors and other homeowners with disabilities outside the city of Ithaca. And as you can see, over the past 10 years, this is, again, funding has declined just slightly over the 10 years, and we are recommending no change this year. The Cancer Resource Center. Again, this is one of the organizations that you may have seen has gone through the new hiring of a new director. We are recommending no change this year. They have had a slight increase. They have had somewhat of an increase over the past 10 years, in part mostly due to the increase in services and the increase in the types of support that they provide to people with cancer in this community. The next is the Food Distribution Network. It's the network of the 15 pantries and soup kitchens in our community. This has also seen really no change over the past 10 years. However, we know that hunger is something that does vary and change, and is something that is difficult to plan for and difficult to foresee economic situations. But as the economy still provides challenges for many families, they have provided in the past year approximately 40,000 meals at soup kitchens and 730,000 worth of meals from the food pantries. So there's still significant need in our community. Law New York, formerly known as Neighborhood Legal Services, we are also recommending no change. The programs that we support focus on the Tompkins County programs. Law New York has become more multi-county oriented over the past several years. However, county funding only supports the work that happens here in Tompkins County. Lifelong is another organization, Tompkins County Senior Center, that we're recommending no change in funding, and you can see that their funding has been with some variation, but relatively flat over the last decade. Multicultural Resource Center is another organization that we are not recommending funding changes for at this point, and as many of you know, they engage in cultural and systemic transformation, building together community and working to break down barriers. So recommending no change here. Southside, we are recommending no change in the total amount of funding from last year to this. We are recommending a change from a one-time to target funding, but otherwise no change in the amount. And Tompkins Learning Partners, again, organization that supports adults in this community to learn to read and write and to learn basic math skills and also to learn English as a second language. They have had some increase in funding over the last decade related to their increased outreach efforts, especially in rural areas outside of Ithaca. But we are recommending no change in their funding from last year to this year. I'll now share two organizations where we are recommending some increases. For Catholic Charities, county funding supports three programs, the Samaritan Center, which is emergency housing, transportation, food, and other help, and also helps people to get out of crisis mode into stability. The Immigrant Services Program, which is moving ahead with the Refugee Resettlement Program, and then the Place to Stay Program, which is transitional and supportive housing for homeless single women. We're recommending a small $500 increase above what we've recommended last year for Catholic Charities. And then Village at Ithaca, which is an organization that supports – oh, wait. Martha, you have a question?
Oh, no, I'm sorry. So on Catholic Charities, at $5,000 –
500.
Yeah, but that 5,000 was last year's.
5,000 last year was a one-time over target.
Sorry.
Yeah. And finally, Village at Ithaca, an organization that works to ensure that all students receive the same high quality education and meet the same standards of achievement. We're recommending an increase of $5,000. There was their first year in the process last year, and so we're recommending that increase this year. I'll now turn it over to Kathy. She'll talk about the over-target requests and some of the other factors.
Okay. So we have three one-time over-target requests that were, I believe, recommended in your budget. Ithaca Rescue Mission asked for funding to reopen the Friendship Center. So our funding is to fund the Friendship Center. And they had to close it this past year because of budget constraints over the weekend, and they asked for money to reopen it, which the review committee thought was really important to the population, have a place for people to go, especially in colder weather. They asked for target. We recommended it one time because in their application they said they were going to spend a year looking for ways to fund this. So we decided to recommend this one-time funding to see how they do in that. The transitional housing is the $50,000 that we talked about a three-year one-time funding. In 2018 will be the second year for this funding. This first year, just to give you some reminder, the money was divided between Catholic Charities for rental subsidies, Advocacy Center for a small pot of money that goes to help people in their shelter to be able to move out to permanent housing, and money for OAR's Endeavor House. And we'll do another round of funding early in 2018. Downtown Ithaca Children's Center wants to add 7 slots for DSS-subsidized children, and this is the money that would make up the difference between what it costs for daycare and what the DSS subsidy is. We also recommend that is one-time funding to see if that actually materializes, if it actually happens the way they planned it out now. So those are our three one-time over-target requests. And then we had three target requests. The first one, I think I talked a little bit about that in the last, is $16,157 for CDRC, Community Dispute Resolution Center. That brings them up to the funding level they were in 2016 and allows them to use the funding to match the state funding that is going to come down to restore their services. And it's good. No other agency in this area is currently equipped to do that kind of mandated mediation services. Ithaca Health Alliance asked for an increase. Their increase is basically around slight salary increases for their staff and rent increases for the space they have. So that is a $5,500 request. This is by their estimate that every $1 spent, the Ithaca Free Clinic estimates provides 3.5 worth of health care services to the community. And Women's Opportunity Center, in order to meet our target, we needed to cut them. We need to cut somebody, and the $5,000 would put them up to just where they were funded last year. and those are our over-target requests. Right. Those are them. And this is our recommendation for OIR. The review committee looks at OIR's request, looks at their information, you know, talks to them, and this is the request from our committee. But Deb will be bringing her, coming to do her presentation to you separately from this request. But Joe asked that we review them along with all the other agencies that come through this process. So that is basically our presentation.
Questions for either one of the people in the back of the room? Mike Sigler.
I just have a couple questions. I mean, I'm looking over this. I'll probably approve a lot of it, probably all of it.
Thank you.
We get a lot for our money. So I do have a couple questions, though. Like the Downtown Ithaca Children's Center. I mean, I remember that a decade ago. They came to us for, like, emergency funding, and we put that in, and we thought, okay, that's going to be a couple years. And we're, like, a decade on now. And I'm just wondering, I guess, why them? Like, there's a lot of children's centers in the county. And why this one particular? Does it get kids from a lot of different towns? Or, you know what I'm saying?
And specifically what we're asking now is they a lot of the children who get the subsidies through DSS go to that center. And the DSS subsidy, which isn't DSS, it's a state subsidy that comes through, doesn't pay for the cost of child care. They actually were struggling very badly a number of years ago and have really brought that program back online. They are full capacity now. But Denise, who runs the program, who's the director there, would, you know, constantly gets requests for slots for people who have the subsidy, which she can't honor because she has to keep her budget where it is. So at a point, she would like to have about 75% of the children who go there be able to be low-income or receiving the subsidy. And what she's trying to do is get that number back up where she would like it. So why them? I suppose another agency could come and ask, but I think historically they've been the one that works closest with DSS to provide daycare for people who are on DSS subsidies.
Okay. All right. My other question is, Have some of these groups ever considered consolidating? Because it just seems like some of them do very similar kind of work. I mean, like our human rights division does stuff that's so similar to like Village of Ithaca and the multi the MRC and the Community Dispute Resolution Center. It would just seem like we could even bring those under the county umbrella. I don't know if that's something they've ever considered or not.
No, we talk to agencies all the time. I mean, I admit, when you are a small agency, and I've been in the business long enough to know, if you have a budget under a certain amount, it's tough to survive because you still have to do what all the bigger agencies do. You have to have boards. You have to have committees. And you might have one or two staff. So one of the problems is finding the right fit, because there might be parts of it that work well with an agency, but other parts of what you do that don't. Like Village of Ithaca works a lot with families and students, and helping kids study, which might work with some agencies, but not really out of the mission of others. And, you know, finding the missions that come together. I think there are parts that sound very similar, but people do little different things. But we're constantly working with agencies, suggesting that, you know, here's maybe where you could fit together with another agency, or parts of what you do could fit together with another agency. And, you know, I don't deny that there are agencies that, you know, there are agencies that have been around for 15, 20 years that still don't have budgets, you know, up to $300,000 or $1 million. So it's tough. They exist on shoestrings. But, yeah, we keep working at that. And finding a place where people could rent and be together and have space. You know, it's difficult because people don't rent a lot of space that they don't already need. I mean, they just have extra space to take in place. There are a lot of issues, but I hear what you're saying.
I was just thinking even personnel. It just seems like there's a lot of overlap in what they do. I mean, if you have expertise in that, and this guy over here is doing kind of the same thing. So.
Yeah, no, I hear.
Carol, then Martha, then Leslie.
I have a couple of questions. One was about the child care center as well. Did you have conversations with them about the ways in which they will ramp up to serve 7 additional children? Is that something you can do for a year? You know, does it pay for them to ramp up, and then not be able to sustain it? Did they weigh in on that? Are there expenses they're going to have that then they've lost?
It wasn't that we think it's only going to be a year, but this is what they're proposing to do. Mostly for any new programs or any new initiatives, we recommend that one-time funding to see, what worked and what didn't. They may come back next year and say, worked great. We got 7. We only got 5. We need 9, whatever it is. But I think you need about a year to see what it is, whether it's going to work or not. I don't know that they think this will. I mean, I think they wish they would continue with this. I don't know if the number of children is going to go up or down, but, subsidies, anything that is subsidized could go away in a minute. So I think that's kind of how child care works. It depends on how many kids are enrolled each year, depending on how many rooms they open. But I think they assume this will be something that will be ongoing.
Okay, thanks. And then I wanted to know something more about the review committee. Your requests to us have already been through a committee of people who've looked at it all. There are some agencies here that requested more than your request to us is.
Yeah.
So I want to know, how do you appoint the review committee, and do they have particular terms? How long have they been serving?
We use members of our board and the members of the community. There are no particular terms. People self-select off, usually after a number of years, unless they're on the board. We try to get 5 to 7. This year, there are people that are usually on the committee that couldn't do it this year. So we usually end up adding a new person. Like this year, we added Christine Barksdale. Last year, Marcia Baum came on. People come and go. Anybody who applies or would, like to be on it. We try to keep it between 5 and 7. It's too hard to coordinate if it's much over that, because we do about 40 some hours worth of reading and meeting, and we do it all in a very compact time frame. So when we get too low, we go out. We actually like it to be people who are pretty familiar with human services and pretty familiar with the agencies. So, they have a good feel for how these things all fit together. We don't have a particularly stringent application process.
Okay, so. And for those who...
If you want to join.
For those... Well, I'll have free time while Jim is sitting at the polls. While he's sitting at the polls, I might be able to contribute. Depends what time of year. If it's the dead of winter, I'm not so sure. The agents... Are we going to be hearing from the agencies that didn't get recommended for their full request to come from you to us? Is there anything to
usually
say there?
Not, no. We haven't. All the agencies have been informed of what we've recommended. Some are here, but the agencies we asked to be here today were people who we requested over target funding for, if in fact you had any questions of them. I don't pretend that I can answer all the questions about all the agencies, so if there's an over target request, we do ask people to come in case you have questions.
The one that I noticed is the alternatives, the tax support. I assume that must be, was that one to keep assisting
flat funding? They requested flat funding, and
They just requested a little bit.
But they had been getting funding requests. We have a target we have to hit. So if we give extra money to somebody, we pretty much have to take it from somebody else. So
So is that so that they could keep up with a living wage? Do you remember the reason?
Now, the alternatives program really actually only has one staff person.
May I interrupt here for a moment? I think this is one of those kind of things that the county administrator left out, that clearly when we get back to voting time, if people want to put this in, clear that would be something that could come back. And I just want to say in your defense, Kathy, that you don't need it, but this is a well-established process that you've been involved with for many years, interviewing, evaluating, and making recommendations for. So my next person was Martha Robertson.
Yeah, very quickly, because I see we're behind time, but the there were a few of them that had small adjustments like that. I really like the 10-year graph. That's fantastic. That's really a whole study in itself. On the merger question, Mike, some do. Better Housing for Tompkins County and INHS merged, or actually Better Housing was swallowed up, you might say. But then some study it and don't. The Racker Centers and the Family and Children's Services studied it for more than a year in depth and then decided not to merge after many years of people saying, gee, you do similar things, you should merge. Kathy, how about increase in the minimum wage? What would that do? I know you try very hard to have all the agencies be at living wage, and I don't know how well that works. I know it's changing every year, so there's a lot of frontline workers. So where does that fit?
So we asked in the original process, and then we went back and asked after it came out last month or whatever it came out. And we didn't have any – we had some agencies – we didn't have any agencies that said they couldn't meet this. But we did get a number of agencies who said, look, our increases aren't enough. If this keeps going up, all – you know, the state's not giving us increases. The feds aren't giving us increases. We just can't sustain this constant raisings. I don't know how we're going to do this. So I think they just wanted to put us, you know, give us a heads up that this is going to become a problem in going forward without any increases in funding. So,
thank you.
Leslie.
Thank you. Catholic Charities is Catholic Charities one of the agencies that will also benefit from the $50,000 continuum of care transitional housing money that you are recommending?
Right, just about 27,000 of it went to Catholic.
For this year? For 2017?
Yes.
So they potentially will get in 2018 as well?
No. So anybody who requested, it's just one-time funding. It doesn't mean they couldn't re-ask for the next funding round, but we've decided to run it as each year. It's a different ask for the $50,000.
Right.
So
they can ask again.
They could, yes.
Okay, and there's no guarantee.
Right.
And then I certainly am not. I'm not questioning you. You have a good committee of people reviewing these, but I'm just trying to understand the rationale behind increasing. Let's see, the Village of Ithaca, and I love the work that the Village of Ithaca does, so it's not a knock on the village. Please don't quote me as such. It's not a knock. And then looking at a place like the Ithaca Health Alliance, where the quote that you put up there was fantastic, but then having to ask for an over-target request of almost the same amount for them. Why not give the Village of Ithaca the amount that they got flat funding, and that $5,000 will go to Ithaca Alliance? I'm just trying to understand the reasoning behind that.
I think some of it is based on the application itself and the presentation. So we ask people who make large requests for funding to come in. We read their application. We come in and talk to us personally. And if we think maybe the request needs to be thought out a little bit more or maybe worked a little bit more, we could say, you know, why don't you bring that back next year? Or So the decision is made by this group after a lot of thinking about, I think they wanted to give the village at Ithaca some support. They had asked for $20,000 last year. We gave them $15,000. They came back and asked for $20,000 this year. The committee felt that it was time to give them what the request was. Ithaca Health Alliance asked for requests for a number of different things. One was insurance for their staff, and we talked to them about how, the director was new last year, and about how we had actually put money in for insurance for the staff a couple of years ago, which was something he just wasn't aware of. So we said, why don't we discuss this over the year, and then we'll talk again next year.
Thank you.
I have one final question, Kath. I'm looking at the Multicultural Resource Center on Section 5, page 27 of the book that I have. And the 2017 county is 66,400 up against a budget of 231,000. And that's one staff, one full-time FTE, five staff of 0.50 FTE. So does that mean six people we're talking about there?
I think they have one full-time staff and three part-time staff. Yep.
All right. Well, it shows in my book they have five.
Right. I'll be and MRC has been going through some changes since we put this in.
Let me continue, and you may not need to answer me now, and I could come and talk with you about it. But in 2018, the 54.3 county number is there, which was on the sheet or on the screen, to a budget of $404,000 with one staff, six staff of 0.5, two staff at 0.75, and eight staff at 0.25. So you and I may have a one-on-one conversation about all that. But
it probably doesn't look the same now as it did when this came through. So we can talk. It's one of the agencies we're working very closely with right now.
Thank you very much. Is there any other question? Does anyone have any question for either of these two people? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Both.
It's not me.
The Office of the Aging is up next, followed by the district attorney. Hello, Lisa.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be with you all on opening night.
Okay.
let's see. For 2018, the Office for the Aging, here's our recommended budget. The not much of a change in net local from 2017, as you can see, a decrease in revenues and expenditures, a decrease of about $63,000 overall, which we'll talk about a bit. Just a reminder and something I like to start with of the mission of the Office for the Aging, and I include New York Connects in this as well, to assist older adults to remain at home and independent with a quality of life and human dignity for as long as possible and appropriate. So all of our programs and services are in support of that mission. And an overview of our department, we have a staff of 15. We have 10 full-time and 5 part-time. That changed somewhat from last year. I think we had 8 full-time and 7 part-time. And I'll be talking about that a little bit more. We administered 28 programs, 22 contracts among 14 subcontractors. And by design from the federal and state government, all of our programs are funded through separate funding streams, 19 funding streams, spanning at least four different fiscal years. So it's for a small department, it's a lot to wrangle. Again, with the full-time equivalents, you can see a little bit of a change between 2017 and 2018. And it's been a concerted effort on my part with some staff who retired this past year who were less than full-time to bring those positions up to full-time because they were needed. But we haven't created new positions, and we've been able to keep that within our budget. Our major, that looks kind of different than I was expecting. We'll roll with that. Our major program areas, value.
They all have value, apparently.
They all have value across the board.
Our pages in the book are fine.
Oh, good, yeah. Good. Well, I'm going to start with New York Connects, upper left corner there. This is a kind of a recent influx of infusion of New York State funds to fund information referral and options counseling, something that we've always provided, but something that is very important to our constituents about the range of long-term care services and supports. Then rotating over to nutrition services, you can see that makes up about 33% of our budget, and all of which is subcontracted with FoodNet Meals on Wheels. The next quadrant is the ISEP Home Care Program. ISEP stands for Expanded In-Home Services for the Elderly, at 19% of our budget. So these two quadrants to the right are really the more intensive services that we provide, often serving our most frail individuals to help to delay or prevent altogether the need for nursing home care. Many of the people that are served by these programs would be nursing home eligible. And then that last quadrant, which is other, all other programs, administration, and planning at 38%. So all of these programs, they're smaller in terms of funding, but they all do work together in concert to try to support people in their homes. This next slide is let's see what this does. Oh, this came out a little better, slightly. This slide is a repeat of the last slide, but it kind of gives you the breakdown of the percentage of federal, state, and local share. And as you can see, that first quadrant for New York Connects is 100% state funded, and the breakdown from there. In terms of major influences, you've seen this graph before if you've ever heard me speak, and just in terms of the growing older adult population, it's something that we are continually working with and understanding the needs and the preferences of aging older adults, because they are changing with the changing demographics. But we're certainly doing our best to serve. Some other major influences, and many of these mentioned on this slide and the next slide have happened already in 2017, mid-year. The first that I'll mention again is this New York Connects program, this infusion of funds that came through the Balancing Incentive Program. Mid-year this year in 2017, we experienced a decrease from what we expected from our state tentative allocation to our final allocation. That difference was about $66,000. So we adjusted for that mid-year this year. And we had known that not all of that funding was going to be sustainable. We were advised to budget for some percentage to be ongoing and some percentage to be one time, and we budgeted well for that. However, what we weren't expecting was that the second piece here. We've been receiving New York Connect's base funding for about the last 10 years, and it's been a reliable source of funding for us, $44,000 annually. And in the New York State budget for 2017-2018, that base funding was moved from the NYSOFA budget to the Department of Health budget, and it's no longer earmarked for aging. So we expected that funding would likely go away by October 1st of this year. We've been recently told that funding is now guaranteed through the end of March of 2018, so we've budgeted for one quarter of that funding for 2018. So due to that cut, we did have a staff reduction and in mid-year here, but we have been able to achieve sustainability, we believe, for 2018 with that funding. The other major influence, again, this came out of this year's state budget. They eliminated a source of revenue for us called the Direct Care Worker Funding. It was about $41,000 in Tompkins County, and it allowed our Office for the Aging and our subcontractors to claim funds to pay up to 3% for increases in salary and fringe costs for direct care staff. So that $41,000 is not in the 2018 budget. And that brings me to the one over-target request that we submitted, and that is a $20,000 OTR, which would go toward our ISIP home care program. And this would fund a 5% increase in the hourly rates paid to our home care subcontractors over the 2017 hourly rates. And just for by way of explanation, we typically attempt to raise the rates of reimbursement to our home care agencies by about 3% annually. When we do that without an increase in the funding, it means that there is, a slight decrease in the overall service hours available to serve individuals. So this request would help to bump up those rates without having to reduce service hours. I can talk more about those rates and if people have questions, because there's certainly there's room for a lot of questions here, but I think I'll just stop there.
Question for Lisa. Carol.
What are the rates now, and what would they be if we did this?
I can answer that only because we are paying the agencies the same rate. If we weren't, I would be. The rates now are $22.80 an hour, and this would allow us to raise the rates to $24 an hour.
And what do you have any idea what the standard in the field is? How does it
well,
compare?
This is here's the this is the rates are typically agencies contract with, they're either private pay rates or they contract, say, for Medicaid, the ISIP program, the VA, and they negotiate rates, and they differ per contract. What I can say is that the government rates have lagged behind the private pay rates, and the Medicaid rates have been decreasing with the advent of managed long-term care. So being that those rates are lagging, it does impact how the provider's ability to pay the aides.
Anyone else? You're done. Thank you so much. Great job.
You're welcome.
Okay. We'll talk later. District Attorney.
on schedule, but I'll try to.
We'll have to blame you.
It's okay. We're in,
I'll take the blame.
Matt, we're in good shape. If you go ahead, do your best.
Okay. And I just want to say this is my first presentation to the legislature as district attorney. I'm happy if the chair is willing to accept questions in the middle of the presentation. That's easier for me in many ways to do it that way. But obviously, we can wait till the end as well. My budget is very similar to last year in terms of the base budget, and I noted that it's almost 96% payroll related. We're a pretty lean office. We don't have a lot of expenditures, and it's really just mostly based on our staff. I'm probably one of many agencies who listed the opioid epidemic as a major influence on my office. The first bullet I put there is criminal justice trends. I think anecdotally we all are aware of the serious crimes that have taken place in the last 12 months. There are more murder cases pending right now in Tompkins County than I can remember at any given time, times probably three. So, you know, that is something that has a dramatic effect on the office, on our resources, on the time that we've spent in trial and the time that we anticipate spending in trial. And the last bullet, which might be the most important one in the long term, is alternatives to incarceration. And I'll talk more about that as we move through the presentation. I thought it was important to list the mission and the goals that I have as my office, in my office. Prosecution of crimes is the obvious mission, but public safety is the goal. And improvement of the public trust in the criminal justice system. What that means to me is that no one feels that they're being treated differently or that their case is being handled in a way that's different because of who they are, because of their economic status, of their race or their religion or their sexual orientation, and that people feel like what we're doing is the right thing. So that's, to me, doing the right thing means not necessarily a conviction in every case. It means that the outcome is in the interests of the public and in the interest of public safety. So under public safety, I've noted long-term and short-term. It's easy to protect the short-term interests of public safety by putting somebody in jail for 3 or 6 months, but that doesn't really help the long-term public safety that we could address by addressing the underlying cause of that criminal behavior, which largely and most often is related to substance abuse or mental health or a combination of those things. So victim advocacy is part of our responsibility, and it goes into how we try to do the right thing, is to the extent possible making the victims whole. And reflection of community values. It's important to me to understand what this community values in terms of our criminal justice system. And it's clear to me, based upon the jail study and based upon my participation in the CJATI board, for example, that this community values alternatives to incarceration, that our incarceration should be not the first choice, but the last resort in terms of addressing criminal behavior. Obviously, there is violent crime that your only choice is to address with incarceration, but in the long term, we're much better off focusing on the alternatives to incarceration. And those things, quite frankly, take much more effort, much more time, much more attention, and they're more difficult than a more simplistic approach to criminal justice. A more punitive approach is way easier, and we could do that all day long with the staff that I have now. But that's not how I think Tompkins County wants to do things. So There's a couple of things on this, the last bullet point. We participate and embrace the treatment court, the two treatment courts in Tompkins County. I've talked a little bit about my policy about bail, and I believe that there should be a presumption of release for lower-level offenses, and that someone should not be in jail based upon their financial inability to pay bail. So that's something that's very important to me, and that's something that I think is a national trend. And so I've talked about that a lot, and I'll continue to talk about it. The last bullet point is something that I've just started working on. It's my goal to put together a task force to address the issue of diversity in our jury pool. I've spoken to a professor up at Cornell who has agreed to be part of that task force. She teaches classes on jury pools and diversity specifically, and has looked at the New York jury pool system. And so I've talked to her. I've got the judge and one of the county court judges and the county clerk on board. And so that's something I'll be putting together as soon as I finish this next murder trial, which starts on Friday, a week from tomorrow. This is our current staff. We have 8 attorneys, including myself, 4 administrative or paralegal, and then 1.5 investigators. And one of those 1.0 positions of those are financed by Stop DWI through that budget. And here's where we get to the important part. I'm asking for 2 additional prosecutors. That comes out to 2 positions at a salary of approximately $65,000 each, with fringes about half of that. So the total OTR request is just under $200,000. Those are positions that are a lower pay scale than the staff attorneys that are currently on staff. Those are positions that are intended to be filled by newer attorneys who are energetic and who are willing to go out and get experience at the local court level, the town and village and city court level, to try cases and to learn and to be a long-term member of the staff who would ultimately go to the next level of trying more serious cases. So the rationale behind this request, I talked about the alternative to incarceration philosophy. So to expand on that, with the way that we want to do things and the way I think this community wants to do things, it requires more work up front to get to know the individual who's charged with a crime, to analyze their case, to assess what the underlying cause of that is, and to determine whether this person is appropriate for the alternatives to incarceration, including treatment court, which is the most commonly used alternative. That's way more difficult and more time-consuming than saying, okay, they committed a burglary, so that's a felony. Let's send them off to state prison, or let's put them on probation for 5 years and forget about them. I think the numbers show that looking at the alternatives and looking at someone for diversion to treatment court, for example, takes 6 or 7 court appearances before the case is really at a point where it's stabilized or resolved, as opposed to 1 or 2, maybe 3 court appearances in a more traditional approach of the punitive model. So it's something that I think is an investment in our community to be able to use the staff to be more engaged in the alternatives to incarceration. I have met repeatedly, at least 3 times, with one of the city court judges who handles the Ithaca City Treatment Court, because he wants more of my time. He wants more of my staff's time, and it just doesn't exist right now. That person is just being pulled in multiple directions and doesn't have the ability to participate in that treatment court to the extent that he should be, to the extent that I want him to be, to the extent that the judge wants him to be, but I just can't, it's not, it doesn't work with our current staff. So the second bullet on this slide is due process and trials, and that's the due process part of this means that we only have the ability to conduct so many trials in county court based upon the number of judges we have and the number of prosecutors we have. And the result of that is that people sit in jail charged with serious offenses for longer periods of time pre-trial than they should. And if we have another judge, which is not part of this presentation, but if we have another available prosecutor or two more, then we could do two trials at once, which isn't being done now. We could move the trial calendar along faster. We could produce closure and justice on a much more expedited schedule, and that ultimately results in savings as far as the case is resolved. If the person is a violent criminal, they're not in our jail anymore. They've gone to the Department of Corrections. We're not paying for them. But they've, most importantly, they've gotten their day in court, and we've done that in a more efficient manner. So I've got, let's see. I talked about alternatives to incarceration. The overarching philosophy is that they are our first priority. The last several bullets are the places and the specialty courts that require that additional time and attention and man hours or person hours that we need to involve in our participation in those things. The trials, due process slide. So this year we've had a murder trial, two robbery trials, at least one assault trial, several larceny trials. We've been in court virtually the whole year to date, and that doesn't count the trials that we have between now and the rest of the end of the year, which included up to five murder trials. One of the cases involved multiple defendants. And you can see those. We're scheduled to be in court for the rest of the year and in trial for the rest of the year. And when it comes to being in trial, we can't just try a serious felony case with one prosecutor anymore. Those days are gone. The technology requires us to have two prosecutors handling any major case based upon the body-worn camera footage and the surveillance videos and the DNA issues. It's just not realistic to have one prosecutor handling a murder case at this point. We have six prosecutors who can handle felony trials. When two of them are engaged in a four-week murder trial, then we have four remaining felony prosecutors who are available to cover the next big case. And in fact, the day after I gave closing argument in the last murder trial, the Najee Green trial, which is about to restart in a week, that morning, before the jury even went and started deliberating, I got a phone call from the chief of police saying that there had been another homicide in Collegetown. So I had to send my deputy up to Ithaca Police Department to handle that because I was still involved in one murder trial. So it's a real drain on our office. And I put in a slide that I think is it's something that's pretty significant. This is three time cards from some of my prosecutors. This is not me. I'm not part of this slide, but I think the top one shows that during a two-week period where we were in trial earlier this year, one attorney logged in 160 hours in a two-week period. And that's not something that I'm asking them to do. That's something that we have to do. It's something that we have to do in order to do the best job that we can at trial to meet the needs of the case. And This is, there's another one that I pulled up, 141 hours over a two-week period, 138 hours over a two-week period. And those are typical of what the attorneys in my office do. They don't complain about it. They stay until midnight if they have to. And, you know, that's something that we can do as long as we're asked to do it. But if we had another person who could do that kind of work, that would be a huge help. So the last bullet in terms of rationale for my request of additional prosecutors is some statistics. The rule of thumb for prosecutors per capita nationally is that there should be one prosecutor per 10,000 county residents. And I've seen this in many different places, and it's just generally accepted. We have 103,000, 104,000 people here, and that's using CGR's numbers from their study. We have 8 prosecutors, including myself. By the way, I handle a full felony caseload, and I handle Lansing Town Court, and I handle half of the town of Ithaca Court, personally. So that per capita works out to one prosecutor for almost 13,000 people. And if you look at comparably sized counties across New York State, you can see that the average of those counties, I won't go through each of them individually, but they average one prosecutor per 9,000 people. And then if you look at the neighboring counties, the average there is a little better than the national expectation. There's an average of one per 9,700 in the surrounding counties. So again, we're I think the leader in terms of how we do things, the alternatives to incarceration, and our the way that we handle our cases. But we're not the leader in terms of staffing or resources. Right now, as I said, we have myself, we have a deputy, and then we have 6 assistant DAs. What I've asked for in the OTR is 2 of the lower level local court ADAs. If that was granted, if both additional positions were filled, we would still be at 1 prosecutor per 10,385. If there was a compromise, as I think, I don't want to speak for Joe, but I think that might be a compromise of 1 of the 2. We would have 1 prosecutor for 11,500 people. So I think for all the reasons, we need help. We need an additional or 2 additional attorneys, and I think that will have long-term benefits, not only economically, but long-term benefits to the county and to the community in terms of the level of justice that we can maintain here.
Mike and Martha, and then Jim. Go ahead, Mike. Go ahead, Mike.
Matt, thanks for the presentation. I think it's historic to have this many murder cases pending. I remember when I started practicing in the 70s, they'd had a murder trial, and it was the first one in years they'd had in Tompkins County. Hiring new DAs is expensive for the county to do that. Does it make any sense when you get a blip in the number like this to farm it out to other prosecutors, other higher attorneys to prosecute? Does that make any sense? Is that more expensive, less expensive?
It's more expensive if you hire private attorneys to prosecute as special prosecutors. In fact, I'm helping Cortland County with all the extra man hours we have. Judge Ames from Cortland County called me and asked me to help him with a prosecutor to handle a burglary case over there. And the reason he called me is because they had assigned an attorney from Binghamton at $200 an hour, and that was coming out of the DA's office budget, and it was just wiping them out. So when we do that as a favor to another county, we don't charge them, and conversely, that happens every so often. I don't have many conflicts of interest, but there are two or three cases that are being handled by a different county as a special prosecutor for us. But it's not something, the only way we could do that without expense would be as if another county DA's office handled that case. And I don't know if that's a, you know, long-term solution.
No, I'm just trying to understand whether that would be a less expensive long-term option to be thinking about that than to actually put new people on payroll.
I don't think it would be.
Martha and then Anna.
Thanks, Matt. Joe, I'm looking at, well, I'll start to understand these rainbow sheets. But you've got, so the, it's, your line here is in blue. Add two ADAs, the gross is 195,000. So I go over to the right, and you've got modification 97,513. So let me just see if I got it right. Okay. So this means that you suggest approval, but like one of the ADAs.
That's correct.
And but you haven't put money into the budget yet to
That's
do it.
That's correct, because it's target and it's is your choice.
Okay. So, Matt, the statistics you gave us, especially, you know, the other counties, is really very helpful. Also really interesting. but the I guess for me, I'm going to really be looking at that whole package of criminal justice things that we're, you know, we're going to be looking at in a whole big bucket at once. So I appreciate the documentation and you're making the case for it. Thanks.
Thanks.
That's not a question. Anna?
Similar train of thought. I really appreciate the work you do. I mean, yeah, seeing you not sleep or texting, asking questions at 3 in the morning and you're up working. If we did only do one instead of two, what would that ratio bring us to? Because even if we did two, we're still over average.
It would be 11,000. It's 11,000.
That was the one. Okay, I didn't catch the difference. Sorry.
Right.
So even with the two, it was still 10,000, over 10,000, correct? So
yes.
Even with the two, we're still way above the average for all the others.
Right. The best case, if both of the additional positions are filled, we're still just over the national average or what the rule of thumb is. And with one, we're over, but we're in much better shape. And with one, I can assign somebody to handle Ithaca City Treatment Court and be there as much as the judge wants.
Mm-hmm. With two, you could have people working normal, sane hours.
Well, still during trial, they're going to be putting in that time. But there's more coverage so that there's, if the next major crime happens, we've gotten a little bit of sleep, or someone who's gotten some sleep is there to handle it.
So the cheapest way for us to get you remotely close to having normal hours would be, the most expensive would be to hire out private, is what I'm understanding. And then the next is keeping it in-house, one and then two. Okay.
And I think, as I mentioned, there is going to be a long-term financial benefit to being able to pay more attention to the alternatives to incarceration. If I stop a serial thief who's getting arrested every single week or every 2 weeks for stealing from Target or from Walmart, and we get them into treatment, and they all of a sudden are healthy and they're not committing crimes to support their heroin habit, then those are county resources that are not being expended on this person. They're not sitting up in the jail because they're going to kill themselves with an overdose if they don't.
So it's hard to measure. Basically, if we have enough attorneys, if we had two, we can't necessarily measure the cost of what won't happen because we're able to prioritize ATIs over punitive.
Right, right. I mean, it's clear that those long-term benefits will have financial aspects to them.
I have Glenn and Mike and Dooley. Go ahead, Glenn.
How long will it take for these two people to come up to speed?
Well, they're, you know, if I hired two, they would be newer attorneys. Mm-hmm. And we have a really good individual who has volunteered to train them. Used to be the deputy DA under George Gentes and now is focusing on local criminal courts and handles more local courts than one person should be handling. But because he is so competent and so experienced, can do that. He's retiring in 20 months. So I've got him now, and he's willing to be the mentor to these people. And these are misdemeanor and violation level courts where you can do it with minimal experience, and that's where you're supposed to get experience. So it would be a very fast it would be fast for them to get up to speed.
Mike, and then Dooley.
Matt, what are the courts you're handling personally again?
I handle Lansing Town Court. There are two judges in Lansing Court, so that involves going there at least twice a month for full days of pretrials and then handling all the cases in the meantime as they come in. And then I handle all the DWI cases for Judge Salk in the town of Ithaca Court. I also have a full felony caseload. We have a rotation where the new felony case comes in, it's assigned to a prosecutor, and the next person's in line. So I'm in that rotation. I take as many felony cases as any other felony prosecutor in my office.
Dooley, thank you.
Back on one of your earlier slides, there was something called IDV Compliance Court, and I don't know what that is.
That stands for Integrated Domestic Violence.
Of course. Thank you. Thank you.
That's another court that is really, it was a great, great idea, whoever had it, to integrate cases involving family members or intimate partners or parent-child. Any family court-related case that also has a criminal case parallel to it is brought in front of the same judge and handled at the same time, or at least in front of the same judge so that the judge is aware of all the dynamics in that case. And that requires an attorney to be monitoring compliance. Most often there's this relationship. You want the relationship to continue in a healthy way, if it's a custody or involves parenting or co-parenting. So that involves an assistant DA being there every week to monitor those cases and participate in that monitoring and address any sanctions that need to be administered if there are problems.
You, I think I heard you say earlier on that it was important and helpful if you could learn more about defendants before you needed to make a decision on initial how to handle a case.
Yes.
And how is that being done now?
Well, we get some information about them from the charges and from the investigation, from the police reports that are associated with those people. And as they're charged with a crime, we also get their criminal history. But there is an opportunity, often if the person is in jail, especially probation, will go and meet with the person and produce an initial screening report that gives some of their background, some of their family history, some of their mental health history or substance abuse history, things that are really important for us to know. The more time and the more ability we have to do that with every single case, the more tailored we can make our approaches. Right now, it's kind of a piecemeal effort. I go to the defense attorney and say, tell me about your client. What should I know? You know, help me out here. Help me understand what's going on with them. You know, but that takes time. And, you know, it's sometimes what gets sacrificed in the process of handling, you know, 100 cases on a particular day.
What, once upon a time, I think there was a position that did that, searching for background information to present to you earlier rather than later. I think the position used to be in DSS. It's been long gone, and I didn't know whether you had thought about how that might be restored. But you don't have to talk about that now. You had mentioned it will be useful. It would be useful to have another judge. Did I hear you right?
You did.
And that would be another county judge for Tompkins County, covering several counties.
It would be what we call a three-hat judge, which those three hats are family court, county court, and surrogates court. We have two of them right now, Judge Rowley and Judge Cassidy. At the moment, those two judges are being asked to cover Supreme Court cases and a significant Supreme Court caseload because we don't have a Supreme Court judge at the moment in this county. So it would be another person who can try felony cases, who can hear family court cases. That doesn't affect me so much, but probably 80% of what those three hat judges do is family court. Each of the two judges we have right now has a trial calendar that is very limited in terms of the number of cases that can go to trial through the year.
Yeah.
So having that third judge, I think, would really expedite justice and the person's day in court and limit the amount of time people spend in jail.
Excuse me. Let me interrupt here for a moment. It's a really compelling conversation that you're having about judges and things like that, but that's not included in your budget. And my sense is you should rest your case now. You've done a great job presenting, and we will take a hard look as we go through the budget, Matt, at your two OTRs. And, you know, thank you so much for coming. Last year, I believe Andrew was here, and for the first time out, you did a great job. A better than great job, so thank you.
Thanks. Thank you, everyone, for your consideration.
Let me just say to the remaining members of the legislature, thanks for hanging around. You know, we're going to be here three nights next week, and, you know, you're going to love each other by the time. Like, well, who has said, we all love you. We love everybody. At any rate, we'll be back next week.
Jim, I miss the pizza. I object. What? I object to all the healthy food.
You object to the healthy food? Yeah, well, probably your legislator. At any rate, do I need to
close this meeting? No.
Motion to adjourn. Second. All in favor? Aye. Opposed? Any? Thank you all for coming.